Stephanie Powers. You're listening to TV Confidential.
Ed Robertson, welcome you to this week's edition of TV Confidential, radio talk show about television that will welcome Louise Schaefer in our second hour. Louise Schaefer, Emmy Award-winning actress, screenwriter, and novelist known to fans of daytime television as Ray Woodard on Ryan's Hope. Louise not only starred on Ryan's Hope for 6 seasons, she later wrote for Ryan's Hope for what turned out to be the final 2 seasons of that series on ABC Television. Louise Schaefer has also starred in several other soap operas, including Search for Tomorrow, The Edge of Night, and All My Children. She is also one of the 4 dozen alumni of Ryan's Hope that our friend Tom Lasante interviewed for an excellent oral history on Ryan's Hope that we'll tell you all about when Louise Schaefer and Tom Lasante join us in our second hour. We hope you stay tuned for that. In the meantime, a few weeks ago, folks, you might recall that we told you about the new exhibit honoring Roy Rogers and Dale Evans at the Hollywood Museum, that exhibit being called Happy Trails, and features a host of never-before-seen personal items from the collection of Roy Rogers and Dale Evans and the Roy Rogers and Dale Evans family, including an impressive array of full-color movie posters, some personal furniture made for Roy and Dale by their friend George Montgomery, photos, collectibles, merchandise, costumes, and a whole lot more. We got such a good response across social media in response to the segment we did around Thanksgiving that we thought that we would invite our friend Julie Rogers Pamilia back onto the program so we could talk some more about the Roy Rogers, Dale Evans Hollywood Museum exhibit Happy Trails. Julie Rogers Pamilia, of course, youngest daughter of Tom Fox, the only biological son of Dale Evans by her first marriage, and the granddaughter of the royal Western couple of American pop culture, Roy Rogers and Dale Evans. Julie's book, Your Heroes, My Grandparents, is the storybook tale of a little girl who just happened to have 2 very famous relatives and who cherished every moment that she spent with them. And Julie Rogers Pamilia, it's great to have you back on our program.
Well, I'm really, really happy to be here.
It must feel good to know that something you put together has been embraced by the public and so many fans across generations remember the hours of entertainment they spent watching Roy and Dale in the movies and on television, and in many cases the opportunity to meet them face-to-face and shake their hands.
Yes, it really does, because it always warms my heart when I think, you know, somebody that I don't know knew them and loved them, and those are 2 people that I knew and loved, you know?
Yeah, and I would imagine as you go from place to place, or even in your daily life when people come to know who your grandparents were, I mean, everybody has a different story about what Roy and Dale meant to them personally, and that keeps them alive for you.
Wow, it really, really does. I've had so many people come up and say, you know, had it not been for your grandparents, I wouldn't have made it. I had an abusive family, you know, parents or whatever, a bad situation, and Roy and Dale got me through. And I had one lady come up in tears, actually several people. And I also have had ladies say, I was so mad at Roy when he got married to Dale. I really wanted to get married to him. He'd wait for me. So that's cute.
Well, no, and the fun things about their movies is that it's very simple. It's good guys and bad guys, and as you say, no matter what, you know, you may be going through at the time, at least, you know, you spend an hour, you know, 2 hours watching one of their movies, watching more than one of their movies if you want to binge watch, as you can do right now. And you may not know how to balance your checkbook this week, but you at least you know that Roy's going to get the bad guy at the end of the movie.
Yeah, it's gonna always end happy and very good with a moral. Yes.
Julie Rogers Pamilia is on the line with us. Julie worked very closely with the Hollywood Museum in putting together the new Happy Trails exhibit, which is on display at the Hollywood Museum, 1660 North Highland Avenue in Hollywood. Tickets and more information, thehollywoodmuseum.com. TVConfidential.com. How did this come together? Did they come to you, and or was it a mutual thing that it's time to put together a Roy and Dale exhibit?
Well, you know, Harlan Bull is my publicist,
mm-hmm.
and he's also helped the museum out a lot and been the publicist there. And he's also good friends with Steve Nicolmo, who is the director of the museum. And Steve is a huge Roy and Dale fan. And so I met him last year sometime, and he said, you know, I'd really love to do a display on your grandparents. And I said, well, that'd be great. You know, let me know. I have a bunch of stuff in my attic. and so through Harlan and through Steve and, of course, Donnell Gadigan, and they were all so kind. They welcomed me with open arms and said, come down and meet with us. Tell us what you have. And it was enough, probably too much, that they could use for an actual display, and it's so expensive. It was so wonderful.
Well, you just touched on something I was going to ask you. Okay, there's so much to choose from, but there's only so much space you can put the display together. How did you know what to choose? Was it hard to leave some things out? How did you narrow it down?
Well, I think it was harder for Steve to narrow it down because I gave him literally everything I had. And that was about 20 big 27-gallon boxes out of my attic. So he was the one that was like, he said he was like a kid in a candy store, that he was going through all the boxes and he just relived his memories as a boy with all this stuff. And, cause, you know, they were very highly merchandised. Everybody except Walt Disney, nobody had as much as he did except Walt Disney. So it was actually Steve. I said, Steve, I'm just going to give you everything I have, and you just decide what you think is important to put in. There were a few comments that I made about this or that was really special to me that I kind of wanted in there, but really very little. I mean, he was the one that did that whole thing. I was overwhelmed.
Okay, it sounds like that once you had everything delivered for Steve to go through the actual staging, the actual, you know, putting this item here and that item here, it sounds like that was his domain. Or did you have any say in how the exhibit was staged?
You know, they asked me some questions like, what would you put with Grandma's skirt? What, you know, what boots would she have worn, this and that, and some other things. And they were so great. I mean, they were very open to anything that I asked of them or that I felt that was important. I had free rein to tell them how I felt, and I did come up with all the trivia that is in the exhibit. They said, do you have any of those did you know kind of statements? I said, oh, there's a lot of those. Actually, I'm working on a coffee table book right now that is just that.
Oh, really?
Pictures and trivia and quotes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Well, needless to say, when your coffee table book is ready and when you're ready to share it with the public, please be sure to let us know. We'll have you back on our program. In the meantime, Julie Rogers Pamilia is on the line with us. Julie Rogers Pamilia, granddaughter of Roy Rogers and Dale Evans. Julie's current book, Your Heroes, My Grandparents, A Granddaughter's Love, is the first book ever written by a family member of Roy Rogers and Dale Evans. Julie's book chronicles the lives of Roy Rogers and Dale Evans while sharing many childhood memories of growing up with her famous grandparents. She also gives you a glimpse of who Roy and Dale were as people, including how the values they showed on screen and off screen were no different than the values they practiced at home. Your Heroes, My Grandparents, A Granddaughter's Love, available hardcover, paperback, and as an ebook through Britain Publishing and Amazon.com. The new Happy Trails exhibit that Julie and I are talking about right now is available on display at the Hollywood Museum, 1660 North Highland Avenue in Hollywood. Tickets and more information, thehollywoodmuseum.com. You mentioned there are a couple of items that you made it clear, if it's at all possible, would you please include this? I don't know if you and I are talking about the same item, but my favorite item in the Happy Trails exhibit, Julie, is the box of what you call it, your rock collection.
Oh, yes. Oh, my goodness. They, yeah, I asked them, and I think at first Steve was kind of thinking, you want this? What do you want this to be in here for? And I said, well, there's actually a chapter in my book about it. It was one of the dearest memories that I had with Grandpa. Which, in fact, I'm not the only Rogers family who's ever written a book, but I'm the only grandchild. And I think that my Uncle Dusty, my Aunt Cheryl have written books, but I think that from the perspective of a grandchild is a totally different thing than one of their children, you know?
Well, you're the only member of the Rogers family who's talked to me who's written a book, so.
Well, very good. Here I am. But, you know, I was showing him my rocks one day. I brought them over. They were just really just ordinary gray stones. It was nothing special. I was only, 10, 11 years old. And he said, come here, come with me. And he took me out to his garage and he showed me these beautiful stones because he liked collecting rocks and finding them. And I didn't realize it, but one by one he was putting his gorgeous stones into my box. And when I picked it up at the end, it's very heavy. And I peeked inside and realized, oh my goodness, he just gave these to me. And it was one of those, just those really special, special grandfather, granddaughter moments. I hugged him, and it was just a very special time. So I kept those rocks all these years, and there they are.
Yes, they're one of the many items on display at the Happy as part of the Happy Trails exhibit at the Hollywood Museum, now on display. Tickets and more information, thehollywoodmuseum.com. Julie Rogers Pamelia worked very closely with Steve Michelmo, the director of operations at the Hollywood Museum, and putting together the Happy Trails exhibit. Her book, Your Heroes, My Grandparents, Granddaughters Love, available wherever books are sold, also available Amazon.com. I love that story, Julie.
It just stood out in my mind all these years, and to think that I still have those rocks he gave me is just very special as well. And I think besides the rocks, they asked me to write a shortened version, little paragraph of mm-hmm. what the point was about this basket of rocks. So if you go in and see the rocks, there is the little story right beside it of how they came to be in the collection.
Yeah, and as we said when we chatted with you last time, that is one of my favorite stories in your book because, and this goes back to what we talked about when we first started our conversation today about how people when folks come up to you and tell you how much, you know, your grandparents meant to them, different things resonate for different people. And when I read that story in your book, Julie, it reminded me of my own dad. My dad was like Roy in the sense that he spoke with his hands. He didn't emote. He spoke with his hands more. And that was
him. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you give in doing that, you give us a real glimpse of who Roy was as a person and how that triggered a very special bond between the two of you for the rest of your life.
Right. It really did. It really did. And he was a man of few words. And he wasn't, he didn't very easily express his emotions. He was super shy, mm-hmm. very bashful, didn't say a whole lot. But like you say, he did with his actions. And when he took me hunting and skeet shooting, he stopped in the truck. And he was quiet, and he just was staring straight ahead. He couldn't even look at me. But he said, you know, honey, I'm just really glad that you wanted to spend time with your old grandpa. And that was just a grandpa and a granddaughter. You know, that's who he was.
Now, Dale, on the other hand, she was the extrovert.
Oh, my goodness. Yes. She told you whatever she thought, whether you wanted to hear it or not. And she was very outgoing. She talked. She was just a very big extrovert, and she always was since she was a little girl. And Grandpa used to say she was the president of the Talkers Club. And, and it's like, okay. He turned to me one time and said, you know, I think you might be the newest member of the Talkers Club. I'm like, well, I don't know if that's a good thing, but I'll take it. Okay. Funny.
Yes, very, very, very funny. The Happy Trails exhibit on display at the Hollywood Museum. Tickets for more information, thehollywoodmuseum.com. Julie Rogers, Pamelia, granddaughter of Roy Rogers and Dale Evans, here with us. Talking about the Happy Trails exhibit, Julie's book, Your Heroes, My Grandparents, Granddaughter's Love, available wherever books are sold through Amazon.com. You mentioned Roy, your grandfather, took you fishing sometimes. One of the things I learned about him in your book, Julie, was he was an avid bowler. Did you ever go bowling with him?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, he took all of us grandkids bowling one time, and he was probably sorry about 15 minutes into it because we were everywhere. And there were gutter balls going on, and you know, he tried his best. He was actually a pretty good bowler. He was on Celebrity Bowling with some other people, George Foreman and John Adams and a lot of people. But he was very good. He was a very good bowler. And he tried to teach me, and I don't think I learned very much, but I had fun. We all had fun.
Well, that's what, and at the end of the day, that's what it's about. It's creating, it's creating memories that
that you can take with you
for the rest of your life, and that if you're in a position to do so, you can share if you decide to write down some of these memories. And Julie shares many of those memories in her book, Your Heroes, My Grandparents, Granddaughter's Love, available Amazon.com, where books are sold online.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is that he was a star. He was a celebrity. People knew him around the world. He's very famous, especially, you know, during the 40s, he was top box office star, but everything, family was everything, and he adored his kids and grandkids, and they spent every time they could with us. So there was never a time that I didn't think that Grandpa, you know, loved me. I knew it. I knew they loved me, and that was that. Even though they were busy, they found time for us.
We're talking about all the memorabilia that Steve McElmoe had to narrow down and choose from in order to put together the Happy Trails exhibit at the Hollywood Museum. And it reminded me of something. You talk about this in your book, Julie, and I think we talked about this last time you were on. Roy was, I mean, they didn't call it branding back then, but Roy was into branding in the sense that any sort of likeness of him, he wanted to make sure that it was done tastefully and was done in a way that was true to his values and the values he portrayed on screen.
Oh yeah, and the companies would send him the prototypes, and then he would use that on his kids, and then when his kids got too old, he'd give them to us, and so we grew up with all that stuff. And he figured, you know, if Roy's kids and grandkids can, you know, not tear the things apart, then it's probably good for the rest of the public. And he also was very picky about what it showed and how it was presented. You're right. And he took that very seriously. He took his fans very seriously and felt that he really had a responsibility to his fans, because he always said, if it weren't for the fans, there wouldn't be a Roy Rogers.
Julie Rogers Pamelia is on the line with us. Julie Rogers Pamelia, granddaughter of Roy Rogers and Dale Evans, and the author of Your Heroes, My Grandparents, A Granddaughter's Love. We'll take a quick time out, then we'll talk some more with Julie Rogers Pamelia. We come back on TV Confidential. One more item. Are you starting a company in an emerging market or developing something new? Do you have intellectual property but aren't sure how to protect it? Reach out to our friends at Tectonic Law. They offer rock-solid representation for groundbreaking industries and need help capturing and protecting their full portfolio of intellectual property and intangible assets, including trademark rights, brand assets, copyright rights, publicity rights, and privacy rights. Tectonic Law streamlines the complex intricacies of intellectual property and business law in easy-to-understand terms that will help you and your company form a concrete plan of action to secure and protect the value of your brand and your creative work product. Tectonic Law is licensed to practice throughout the state of California. They also practice before such tribunals as the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office and the Internet Corporation for assigned names and numbers. Go to tectoniclaw.com, tectoniclaw.com, to learn more about how Tectonic Law can help your business thrive. Tectoniclaw.com. Rock solid representation for groundbreaking industries.
This portion of TV Confidential is brought to us by our friends at Front Porch Realty, the community of realtors in the Northern Bay area of California that is committed to finding the solution that is best for their clients. Whether you're a first-time home buyer or looking to sell or lease your property in Northern California, call Karen Strain at 415-886-7411 or visit frontporchrealtygroup.com. For more information on how they can help you.
This portion of TV Confidential is brought to you by PrisonFit. PrisonFit, a new, comprehensive, and integrated approach to exercise, food, and employment that was developed by prisoners, for prisoners, parolees, and anyone else listening to this program who would like to improve their overall health and well-being. You can learn more about PrisonFit by going to PrisonFitLife.com. PrisonFit's mission is to create work programs and partnerships that will provide both incarcerated inmates and released or paroled individuals with meaningful employment, training, rehabilitation, and reentry opportunities while treating them with dignity and respect. PrisonFit's main program, Introduction to Small Business, not only has graduated more than 500 in-prison students, but has produced a 2-year released graduate recidivism rate of 6.7%. PrisonFit will expand its Introduction to Small Business program on a statewide basis in 2025, and this is where you can help. PrisonFit is conducting a Kickstarter campaign throughout the month of January 2025 to offer the public various fitness publications and products. The proceeds from this campaign will not only complete and launch these publications and products, but will provide the necessary resources for PrisonFit statewide in-prison Introduction to Small Business course. For more information, go to PrisonFitLife.com and click on the Go to Kickstarter button. That's PrisonFitLife.com. Click on the Go to Kickstarter button. PrisonFitLife.com. Click on the Go to Kickstarter button or go to Kickstarter.com and search for PrisonFit. Ed Robertson welcoming you back to TV Confidential, radio talk show about television. Always happy to welcome back our friend Tom LaSante. Tom LaSante, award-winning author of more than 10 books on movies and television from the 60s and 70s. Plus, you've seen Tom on Turner Movie Classics, as well as the documentary The Green Girl about the life and career of Susan Oliver. And I understand Tom will be seen in a forthcoming documentary about novelist and screenwriter Terry Southern. Tom's latest book, Ryan's Hope, An Oral History of Daytime's Groundbreaking Soap, tells you everything you want to know about the Emmy Award-winning daytime drama originally aired on ABC from 1975 to 1989 from the perspective of more than 4 dozen actors, writers, producers, and other creative personnel who worked behind the scenes of Ryan's Hope. Ryan's Hope, one of the first daytime dramas to be set in a real city, New York City, within a very recognizable neighborhood and a very recognizable community, and which depicted the trials and tribulations of a working-class family of Irish Catholic immigrants, although one did not necessarily have to be Irish or Catholic or an immigrant or from an immigrant family to enjoy Ryan's Hope. Ryan's Hope also often a very topical series with stellar writing that was known to tackle such issues as infidelity, addiction, religious faith, and women's rights. We'll tell you where you can find Ryan's Hope and Oral History in just a second. Tom LaSante, welcome back to our program.
Thanks, Ed. Thanks for having me back.
Also on the line with us is Emmy Award-winning actress, screenwriter, and novelist Louise Schaefer. Louise won an Emmy for playing Ray Woodard on Ryan's Hope, character that she played for 6 years. She later wrote for Ryan's Hope for what turned out to be the last 2 seasons of Ryan's Hope on ABC. Louise Schaefer has also starred in several other soap operas, including Search for Tomorrow, The Edge of Night, and All My Children. I understand Louise played Erica Kane's evil stepmother on All My Children. Louise also wrote for several other soap operas, including General Hospital, Loving, and As the World Turns, and is the author of at least 7 novels, which you can find at Amazon.com, wherever books are sold online. Louise Schaefer's appearance today, courtesy of Tom LaSante. Louise Schaefer, welcome to TV Confidential.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm going to start with Tom as far as Ryan's Hope is concerned, but before we do that, I have to tell you, Louise, your author bio at Amazon.com is one of the most entertaining author bios I have ever read. Normally, an author bio is like a 1 or 2 sentence thing where you just say, Louise Schaefer is an Emmy Award winning writer. She lives in so-and-so, and she's written such-and-such. But you give readers a sense of who you are as a person. I laughed out loud after I read it.
Well, you know, I used to be an actress, and I think I kind of did it the way you would do the bio in a playbill if you were doing a show.
Well,
I think I put it together that way.
Well, look, you're a writer at heart. And you know this better than anybody else. One of the things a writer hopes to do is evoke some sort of response, some sort of reaction from the people who are reading their work, whether it's a novel, whether it's an episode of Ryan's Hope, or whether it's your author bio. So the fact that you evoked a reaction from me, that tells me you know what you're doing as a writer.
Well, thank you so much.
Okay. There are several ways we can start this conversation. I'll just start with this, Tom. What's fun is I understand your interest in Ryan's Hope began kind of sorta, or is linked kind of sorta, with your interest in Carol Lindley.
Yes, in 1980, I was a freshman at Napa Community College, and I commuted, from home, and had a big break between classes during the spring semester, and one day I bought lunch, and I got home, and I turned the TV on, and as I was flipping through the channels, I saw this pretty blonde that looked like Carol Lindley, who was a big fan of, and I even wrote a book about her, and I started to watch it, and she was running to this guy that the big mob boss had been killed, and he was her silent partner in this fancy restaurant in Central Park. And she wasn't sure what was going to happen, and if the Ryan family found out that she was in cahoots with the mobster, she'd be in big trouble. And I just kept watching it, not knowing what I was watching. And then credits rolled, and it said Ryan's Hope. And I was like, Ryan's Hope? That's a soap opera. I didn't know soap operas had mobsters on them now. And that was the start of me watching it. And that was pre-VCR, so I would catch it the 2 or 3 days when I had those breaks. And my grandmother was a huge ABC fan, surprisingly. Usually older women of her generation watched the CBS or the NBC shows, but my grandma watched ABC from Ryan's Hope all the way down to The Edge of Night at 4 o'clock, and I would call her up, and she would fill me in on what I missed. And she knew I loved Delia. That was Randall Edwards was the blonde, and she played the scheming Delia, and she would always fill me in. And that was the start of me watching Ryan, though.
So did you ever imagine X number of years later that you'd have a chance to not only talk to Louise, but talk to, close to 50 other people who helped bring Ryan's Hope? Did you ever imagine you might do that one of these days?
Back then, no. I mean, I would buy Soap Opera Digest and get, sucked into the whole world of soap operas. The part-time job that I got shortly after that was in a bank filing mortgages, and the vault where the mortgages was in the basement where the luncheonette was at a TV, and the ladies would come down to watch the TV during their lunch break. So the 12 o'clock crowd would watch Family Feud and Ryan's Hope. The 1 o'clock crowd came down for One Life to Children, and the 2 o'clock crowd came down for One Life to Live. So I got sucked into this because I would sit there on my desk and do these mortgage things watching the TV. So I got sucked into All My Children and One Life to Live, and that's how my love of soap operas just kept growing and growing. Between my school break and that job I had got me a soap opera.
Tom Lasante's latest book, Ryan's Hope, An Oral History of Daytime's Groundbreaking Soap, Everything You Want to Know About the Emmy Award-Winning Daytime Drama that originally aired on ABC from 1975 to 1989, as brought to you from the perspective of the people who worked on Ryan's Hope, who brought you Ryan's Hope. Ryan's Hope, An Oral History of Daytime's Groundbreaking Soap, available wherever books are sold. Through Kensington Books. You can also find it at Amazon.com. One of the people that Tom talked to and who shares many memories of her years on Ryan's Soap is Emmy Award-winning actress Louise Schaefer, Ray Woodard on Ryan's Hope. And Tom brought up something, Louise, that, I mean, he brought up the first thing that hooked him when he first watched the show was the mob backstory. From what I understand, that touches on part of the appeal of Ryan's Hope to begin with. It was very, very concrete. You know, you had, it was very, very concrete, and that attracted viewers. Did that attract you to the show when you first joined the cast?
You know, I have worked with Paul and Claire.
Paul and Claire being Paul Mayer and Claire Levine, the co-creators of Ryan's Hope.
On Where the Heart Is, which was a show that they took over. They did not create that show. But, yeah, the whole ethos of that show actually appealed to me a lot. Because it was New York-based, it was based in a real place. They owned a bar. That, as far as I knew, had never happened before. There were real religious and ethnic backgrounds. Jack Finnelli was Italian. They did a story about a Jewish family. It was very much reality based, and as a New Yorker, a reality that I absolutely loved. So all of that, in addition to the fact that for me, Claire Levine was one of the greatest dialogue writers who existed in our medium. I mean, if you got a Claire Levine script or a Claire Levine edited script, three quarters of your job as an actor was done for you. So, I mean, it was kind of like, okay, fine, just learn a lot. So for all of those reasons, and even, you know, my own character, I mean, she was a newspaper and media mogul. She had a reality. She wasn't just kind of amorphously rich. She had reasons. She had a background to the money that she had. So for all of those reasons, yeah, that was what attracted me to the show.
I know that oftentimes when an actor joins a primetime series after one or two years, it could be challenging because you're the new kid on the block and you have to figure out your way. How do you fit into the dynamics of this successful series? Do the same challenges come into play when you join a daytime show, or does it depend on which show and what environment you're entering into?
I mean, it depends a lot on the actor. That's an interesting question. Yeah, I mean, look, you spend the first few weeks trying to figure out where the ladies' room is. You know, you have that kind of challenge. But, you know, I never was really aware of that kind of thing, because I always used to just walk on that set really determined to play the scenes. And for me, that job was understanding what I wanted. That's how I work as an actor. You understand what you want, what your character wants, and therefore you, because I believe in working in the first person. So it was kind of like if there was a lot of that stuff going on around me, I didn't really notice it. I tend to be very bad, a bad source of gossip about the show that I'm on. I'm not really paying attention to anything except what my character wants to accomplish for the day. I'm very boring that way.
Well, I would say you're very focused. You know, you're very linear in your approach, and that's part of what makes you a good actress.
Well, thank you. It's the only way I know how to survive. And particularly when you're doing daytime where, I mean, remember, we're shooting in one day what prime time takes a week to 10 days to shoot, and a movie can take God knows how many weeks or months.
Which which underscores one of the things I wanted to ask you. I confessed before we started talking on the air, folks, that I'm not an aficionado of daytime drama, but I have talked to enough actors who work on daytime shows to understand, appreciate just how hard you work on that show, whether you're doing a 30-minute show, a daily 30-minute show, or a daily 60-minute show. You still got to memorize new pages every day with virtually zero notice. And it also goes for, it's not just you, the actors who work very hard, but also the people behind the scenes who help you work very hard. I mean, I have a great appreciation for that, Louise.
Thank you. I'm glad you do. Because we were sort of like the stepchildren of the industry a lot. Not so much now, I think, the remaining shows that are folks that are still on the air. But it was a lot of very hard work. It's also a hard thing to write a show like that, again, because you're turning out a lot of content in a very short period of time.
Louise Schaefer is on the line with us. Louise Schaefer, Emmy Award-winning star of Ryan's Hope and later one of the writers of Ryan's Hope. Louise is one of the 4 dozen alumni of Ryan's Hope that our other guest this hour, Tom Lasante, interviewed for his latest book, Ryan's Hope, An Oral History of Daytime's Groundbreaking Soap. Ryan's Hope, An Oral History of Daytime's Groundbreaking Soap, available wherever books are sold through Kensington Press. You can also find it at Amazon.com, wherever books are sold online. I want to circle back to something we talked about before, or it touches on something we talked about before. I understand the camaraderie between the actors on the show was almost like a family, partially because you had to work as hard as you did to create new content 5 days a week, but also because there's a lot of there's very much a stage or a theater vibe because the show is based in New York and you had a lot of New York actors. Louise, what was that your experience? And then Tom, you comment on that as well.
I mean, your survival of the day depended on, the person that you were working with or the people that you were working with. And there was no kidding around, particularly in the beginning when I first went on Ryan's, we didn't shoot in segments. We shot the show straight through. And you really had to end at the end. I mean, there wasn't a lot of overtime. And yes, they would, every once in a while, they would rework a shot. They'd reshoot something. But they pretty much wanted you to get in and out of there on time. So it wasn't like you had 48 takes on something. You kind of had to get it done once. So that gave it a certain, how do I say this politely, urgency. and you were bonded by blood with the people you were working with. It was a lot of thinkers for survival.
Tom, you want to elaborate on that?
I should say I think it was like that at the beginning. More family amongst the cast because, Claire Levine and Paul Mayer were not only the creators of the show, they were also the head writers and the executive producers. So I think they created a family-type atmosphere. I mean, I heard from the people I interviewed, Claire just loved the actors and loved to be loved, and Paul sort of was like the business part of it, and he had to do like a lot of the dirty work. Firing actors or giving them suggestions about various things. But that third core group with starting with Helen Gallagher, who we just recently passed away, and Mae Ryan and Ernie Barrow and Johnny Ryan, were the patriarchs, were the core of the show. They're like the tenfold characters. And it sounds like off stage and on stage, they were looked up to and totally respected because of their great careers. And then the first, there was Kate Mulgrew, Michael Hawkins, Eileen Kristen, Michael Levin, Malcolm Groom, the first Ron Hales, Roger Coleridge, Nancy Addison is Jillian Coleridge, Dave Kaplan is Dave Coleridge, the Rich family that was best friends with the working class Ryan. And a lot of the actors had known each other. Eileen and Malcolm worked together on Grease. Eileen was off stage. She was friends with...
On the line with us are Louise Schaefer and Tom Lasante. Louise is among the four dozen alumni of Ryan's Hope that Tom Lasante interviewed for his latest book, Ryan's Hope, An Oral History of Daytime's Groundbreaking Soap. Louise and Tom will stay with us for another segment. We hope you'll stay with us as we continue our conversation here on TV Confidential. One more item. Are you starting a company in an emerging market or developing something new? Do you have intellectual property but aren't sure how to protect it? Reach out to our friends at Tectonic Law. They offer rock-solid representation for groundbreaking industries who need help capturing and protecting their full portfolio of intellectual property and intangible assets, including trademark rights, copyright rights, and privacy rights. Tectonic Law streamlines the complex intricacies of intellectual property and business law in easy-to-understand terms that will help you and your company form a concrete plan of action to secure and protect the value of your brand and your creative work product. Tectonic Law is licensed to practice throughout the state of California. They also practice before such tribunals as the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office and the Internet Corporation for assigned names and numbers. Go to tectoniclaw.com to learn more about how Tectonic Law can help your business thrive. Tectoniclaw.com, rock solid representation for groundbreaking industries.
This portion of TV Confidential is brought to us by our friends at Front Porch Realty, the community of realtors in the Northern Bay area of California that is committed to finding the solution that is best for their clients. Whether you're a first-time home buyer or looking to sell or lease your property in Northern California, call Karen Strain at 415-886-7411 or visit frontporchrealtygroup.com. For more information on how they can help you.
This portion of TV Confidential is brought to you by PrisonFit. PrisonFit, a new, comprehensive, and integrated approach to exercise, food, and employment that was developed by prisoners, for prisoners, parolees, and anyone else listening to this program who would like to improve their overall health and well-being. You can learn more about PrisonFit by going to PrisonFitLife.com. PrisonFit's mission is to create work programs and partnerships that will provide both incarcerated inmates and released or paroled individuals with meaningful employment, training, rehabilitation, and reentry opportunities while treating them with dignity and respect. PrisonFit's main program, Introduction to Small Business, not only has graduated more than 500 in-prison students, but has produced a two-year released graduate recidivism rate of 6.7%. PrisonFit will expand its Introduction to Small Business program on a statewide basis in 2025, and this is where you can help. PrisonFit is conducting a Kickstarter campaign throughout the month of January 2025 to offer the public various fitness publications and products. The proceeds from this campaign will not only complete and launch these publications and products, but will provide the necessary resources for PrisonFit's statewide in-prison Introduction to Small Business course. For more information, go to PrisonFitLife.com and click on the Go to Kickstarter button. That's PrisonFitLife.com. Click on the Go to Kickstarter button. PrisonFitLife.com. Click on the Go to Kickstarter button or go to Kickstarter.com and search for PrisonFit. Ed Roberts with a reminder that the next edition of TV Confidential will premiere next week on this station at the usual time. We will welcome back singer, actress, Broadway star, and Emmy Award-winning producer, Lucy Arnaz. We hope you'll join us for that. In the meantime, by now, I'm sure most of you listening this week are aware of the passing of David Lynch. David Lynch, the Oscar-nominated and Emmy-nominated writer, director, and producer, who was also the co-creator, along with Mark Frost, of Twin Peaks. Twin Peaks, the surrealist mystery horror drama that originally aired for two seasons on ABC in the early 1990s, and which later returned for a third season on Showtime in the spring of 2017. David Lynch passed away Wednesday, January 15th, at the age of 78. Also a renowned painter and musician, David Lynch first made a name for himself in 1977 with the release of the surrealist independent film Eraserhead, starring Jack Nance and Charlotte Stewart, David Lynch later earned 3 Academy Award nominations for Best Director, first for The Elephant Man, then for Blue Velvet, and Mulholland Drive. You might recall that in June 2016, we had a chance to talk to Charlotte Stewart about working with David Lynch in a conversation that aired here on TV Confidential. Though fans of Little House on the Prairie know her best as school teacher Ms. Beetle, Charlotte Stewart also played Mary X in Eraserhead and Mary Briggs in both the original Twin Peaks on ABC and the Showtime revival series Twin Peaks: The Return. At the time we spoke to Charlotte Stewart in June 2016, she was just about to begin production of Twin Peaks: The Return. Charlotte's book, Little House on the Hollywood Hills, is a memoir of her life inside and outside of television, a life that in many ways embodied the hippie movement of the 1960s, the era of free love in the 1970s, and the danger of cocaine addiction in the 1980s. Little House in the Hollywood Hills is available through our friends at Bear Manor Media. You can also find it at Amazon.com, CharlotteStewartBook.com, and wherever books are sold online. We talked a little bit about this before we started recording, Charlotte. One of my favorite, actually, two of my favorite chapters of your book, Little House in the Hollywood Hills, are the chapters where you talk about David Lynch. Now, I admitted this to you before we started recording. I'll say this on the air. I have not seen Eraserhead, but because you not only walk the reader through the process of making Eraserhead, and it took a while to make the movie, and because you give us a window into David's mind as a producer, I feel as though I've seen the movie, and actually I want to see the movie now.
Well, I hope you do. And here's what I tell people that they want to say, well, what's it about? If you ask David Lynch that, he won't answer. He says, go see for yourself. And I say basically the same thing. What I tell people is, when you go see a David Lynch film, and especially Eraserhead, go like you're going to a museum of art. You go into the museum and you walk into a room and there's a big painting right in front of you. And what I like to do when I go look at, you know, paintings in the museum is let it wash over me. Let it speak to me. There is no figuring out Eraserhead. It's an experience. And I've taken people to screenings who hated it. Hated it with such a passion they could hardly speak. And I tell David that, and he goes, great.
Yeah.
They felt something.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
You don't have to understand what it's about. Let it, you know, get in your gut and either make you mad or make you laugh.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
Just wants you to feel something. In fact, the first time I saw it, David said, called me up after, he says, well, Char, what do you think? I said, it's like a toothache. It hurts so bad. He went, swell. That's what I say about Eraserhead.
And along the same lines, because you mentioned, you used the painting analogy.
Uh-huh.
Now, I have seen all 28 episodes of the original Twin Peaks. And
uh-huh.
And like a lot of people, I mean, I thought it was brilliant, and yet in the second season I was a little frustrated because it was kind of, I was wondering what was going on, and when,
uh-huh.
but as I said, going back to the insights you give your readers on who David, on David's process, when you talk about David's background as a painter, all of a sudden I had an aha moment in the second half of the second season made sense to me.
Yeah. Well, you know, it is hard to follow in the second part. And I have an opinion about that. I don't know that it's accurate, but my opinion is David went on to do some other things during the second season. He did come back, but it was in the hands of other people. And I think, and I could be wrong, that the people tried to do what I call, in quotes, Lynchism.
Yeah.
You know, try to do a Lynchism. And only David Lynch can do a Lynchism, you know. Yeah. He's the only one qualified. So I think that's where they kind of fell apart there. But we'll see with the new show what's going to happen. Maybe there's a lot of explanations that will come out. I don't know because I have not seen a script. I saw what I was supposed to do, and I did, you know, my work. But until we see it on the air, we'll never know what, you know, what was meant by this scene. I'm in a scene that's a little odd, I'll say that, but I can't say anything more because I'm under a contract to not speak about it.
Yes, yes, and I understand non-disclosure agreements and fear of death. So we will not press you anymore about that. Although I will say, once the show went to series, and you got into the second season, instead of being given the entire script, you were only given your pages.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And we were no longer allowed to just drop by the studio anytime we felt like it. You know, before, it was like a big family, and all we did was, you know, when we weren't working, we'd go hang out. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, who the hell doesn't want to hang out with Kyle MacLachlan? But they said no, closed set. We weren't allowed. We didn't get scripts. And we didn't know any more of the story than anybody else. In fact, when they ended the first season, when Agent Cooper got shot,
mm-hmm.
we thought we were all out of work, you know? I mean, oh my God, you know, what just happened? So, and you know, David works that way, and Mark Frost writes that way, so, you know, I think we're in for a big ride in the new series.
But at the same time, I would imagine, Charlotte, that as an actor, that poses a challenge for you because, you know, okay, you come to it knowing what you know about your character and what you know about the overall context, even if you may not know where this fits in the episode you're filming it in.
Actress Charlotte Stewart sharing a few memories of working with David Lynch
on Eraserhead and Twin Peaks.
David Lynch passed away Wednesday, January 15th, at the age of 78. Robertson, back to Tony Figueroa, Donna Allen, Bill Grice, and Susan Silver, thank you so much for listening. Stay healthy, stay safe. We'll talk to you next time on TV Confidential.
This portion of TV Confidential is brought to us by our friends at Front Porch Realty, the community of realtors in the Northern Bay area of California that is committed to finding the solution that is best for their clients. Whether you're a first-time home buyer or looking to sell or lease your property in Northern California, call Karen Strain at 415-886-7411 or visit frontporchrealtygroup.com. For more information on how they can help you.
One more item. Are you starting a company in an emerging market? Or developing something new? Do you have intellectual property but aren't sure how to protect it? Reach out to our friends at Tectonic Law. They offer rock-solid representation for groundbreaking industries who need help capturing and protecting their full portfolio of intellectual property and intangible assets, including trademark rights, brand assets, copyright rights, publicity rights, and privacy rights. Tectonic Law streamlines the complex intricacies of intellectual property and business law in easy-to-understand terms that will help you and your company form a concrete plan of action to secure and protect the value of your brand and your creative work product. Tectonic Law is licensed to practice throughout the state of California. They also practice before such tribunals as the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office and the Internet Corporation for assigned names and numbers. Go to tectoniclaw.com. TectonicLaw.com to learn more about how Tectonic Law can help your business thrive. TectonicLaw.com, rock solid representation for groundbreaking industries.
Do you owe the IRS $10,000 or more in back taxes? Are you being audited or investigated? Has the IRS sent you a letter demanding payment? You may not owe what they claim. Make this free call to the Tax Doctor now. Let them negotiate with the IRS on your behalf.
800-239-0201. 800-239-0201. That's 800-239.
Jones's Fort Gunshot, serving Shasta County for over 50 years. It's a new year, and we are very excited about the new leadership for our nation. Jones's Fort is offering Hornady 5.56 NATO 75 grain tap precision ammunition on sale now for just $199 a case. That's right, $199 a case. This ammo delivers phenomenal performance for your AR-15 style rifle. Jones's Fort, serving all your firearm needs since 1962. And yes, Jones's Fort will pay for your ammo background check.
Join Tolkien's Radio Show every Sunday at 2 p.m. on 96.5 FM and AM 1460 as host Christy Matthews and Linda Kent explore the exciting world of cryptocurrency and blockchain technology. Learn how Bitcoin is revolutionizing finance and grasp sound money principles. Hear new perspectives on achieving financial freedom beyond broken institutions. The future of money is here. Empower yourself with knowledge. Listen to Tolkien's Radio Show with Linda and Christy this Sunday at 2 p.m. on KCNR. Big and exciting changes are underway.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.